We've got news, Olympic news, and Sean Rourke, it's the Olympic news we all expected. It came out just before we started recording this podcast on Wednesday. NHL players will not be going to the Olympics. And basically what Gary Bettman, NHL commissioner, has said is there has been a material disruption in the schedule with 50 games postponed at this point, and we're in a break right now. And they got to use the Olympic window, that break from February 6th through the 22nd, to reschedule some games that they can. So this is the news. It's official now, Sean. It's what we all expected.
Yeah, not unexpected for sure. Still sad. You know, obviously, there was a lot of excitement about going to Olympics. The players were excited. They negotiated it into the new CBA with the understanding that in the COVID world, if things came to pass, that there would be a chance that they couldn't go. And that's come to pass. And I think, you know, the news just came out, but it's been hanging there for a couple of days, and players have been speaking about it. The big players have been speaking about it, the McDavids, the Crosbys, the Canes. And I think you heard in all of their voices the fact that, you know, there's a general disappointment, but there's also a general understanding of we're not where we had hoped to be in the COVID situation, right? The season started with so much promise, and then as it's winter settled in, you know, there's been some challenges, and there's been challenges across the sporting landscape. So unfortunately, the Olympics is a casualty to that. There's already 50 games that need to be made up. So, and that 3-week window is going to be difficult. Like, you're like, oh, 3 weeks, you can make up 50 games. Well, you can't, because the buildings are scheduled for other things. People wanted to make money while we were taking a 3-week break. So it's really going to be a jigsaw puzzle for the NHL scheduling department, Steve Hatzepetros and his group, to kind of figure out how they're going to put this all back together. But it'll at least be a beginning and take some of the strain off of what is already going to be a sprint to the finish line after that February break.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. Like, I wonder if you put it the right way. There's a general disappointment, and there's a general understanding from the player's perspective. They want to go. I mean, you hear it in Steven Stamkos's voice, especially. He's the one to me that I'm like, oh, like I feel for that guy. Like, he's done everything right in his career to be an impact player, and he's been an impact player. In 2010, he was too young. He just wasn't going to be able to make that team. In 2014, he was primed and raring and ready to go, and he got hurt. NHL players didn't go in 2018. And this year, he's having that type of season that you'd be like, well, he could be a legitimate Team Canada player, and now he's not going, and he's right. He may never get the opportunity now, because even though Gary Bettman in his statement said, we look forward to the Olympics in 2026, which I think is a nice thing to say, and it's a great statement, and it gives people hope that NHL players will be back, that's 4 years away for Steven Stamkos, who's already a veteran player. So he's a guy that I do feel for. But I also wonder, Sean, if there is also some sense of relief here for players, because as disappointed as they are and as much as they want to go, they had to have been nervous about the protocols that were in place in Beijing that they were going to be up against. And I just give you this example. Imagine you are, well, let's just say Steven Stamkos, right? Imagine you're playing for Team Canada, and it's right before the gold medal game, and you're there, and it's been a bubble atmosphere, and you're playing the whole way through. And then right before the gold medal game, you test positive. You cannot play in the gold medal game, and you cannot go home. And you're going to now see your team playing without you for 3 to 4 weeks, right? If I'm a player, that would make me incredibly nervous, yet excited to have the opportunity, nervous about it. So I wonder if there's a little bit of a unspoken sense of relief here too.
I'm sure there is. I mean, look, sometimes players need to be saved from themselves. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that they're all type A personalities. They're driven to take on challenges. They want the biggest challenge. They want the biggest stage. And they will put almost anything out there to do it. You see it every year in the playoffs. Guys play injured. Not hurt, injured. You know, and they ask things of their body that probably shouldn't be asked, because they're competitors. There's a sense of camaraderie that they have with their teammates. All those things that are admirable, but that can cause difficulties. And that I think would be the case in the Olympics. I think that there would be some, oh boy, I hope this doesn't happen to me, but I'm going to go anyways, because it's a once in a lifetime chance. Even if you've been before, it's a once in a lifetime chance because it's different. So now there's certainty. Right now it's not hanging anymore. Now it's not, well, what about the Olympics? And I think it's huge in a way for teams who are going to have to deal with the new COVID reality for the foreseeable future as we go through the winter, to know that they have their players and that their players will be healthy and not worn down, their star players, and they can start to plan for what that stretch run is going to look like and know exactly, you know, what they have, and not have that wild card of sending a bunch of their marquee players to go play in the Olympics and wonder what they're going to get back.
Yeah. And I think just, you know, from a fan perspective, you know, it is, the Olympics are a terrific tournament. It's best on best. I mean, we've seen some amazing things happen in the Olympics. And so there's a disappointment there from a fan perspective, but there has to also be a general understanding that the NHL, and Don Fehr mentioned this in his statement released by the NHLPA, that the NHL hasn't had a full 82-game schedule for all these teams since 2018-19, right? It didn't happen, obviously, in 2019-20 because of COVID. It didn't happen last year. And the hope is that it happens this year. So you've got to give that every opportunity. This is still a business. It's the business of the NHL that matters. And you got to give the competitive integrity of the league an opportunity here. And, you know, that 3-week window, and you mentioned it's going to be interesting. And Gary Bettman and Bill Daly mentioned it at the Board of Governors too. It's not a lock that they'll be able to reschedule all these games in that window because of building availability, because, you know, these buildings were dark for so long and they had to fill them, you know, they had to fill them. And you may be able to buy out an act here and there if you're going to make more money at a hockey game rather than a smaller act playing in a bigger venue. But we'll see where it goes. But they're going to try to reschedule a bunch of those games there within that window. And I think it's going to be, it's adapt and be flexible right now, right? I mean, that's really what it is. It's adapt, be flexible, and be prepared for anything. I mean, even if you're especially if you're an American Hockey League player, right? Like, just be prepared, because that call could be coming at any time. You never know when you might be needed. If you're an NHL player, just adapt, be flexible. And I think they're used to it by now.
Yeah, they may be used to it, but they're such creatures of habit that it becomes difficult, right? And understandably so, it's difficult for all of us, right? Last night, you wanted to sit down and watch a couple of games. And, you know, it was a big night in the schedule originally. And by the end, you got to one game at 10 o'clock, which was a great game and a great way to go into the break. It was Vegas and Tampa Bay, two of the top teams in the league. And they went at it hammer and tongs until the very end. Your guy, Steven Stamkos, with the big goal to send Tampa home with a win. And you talk about, you know, adapting. John Cooper has to pull the plug right before the game and they go on without missing a beat, right? I think, you know, this is really a look into the mindset of an elite athlete. You see it across all sports, right? Football has been impacted. The numbers for the last 2 weeks in football have been ridiculous, and teams have had to field, you know, guys that you've never heard of. The Washington football team had the New England Patriots practice squad quarterback, and he performed well. And again, if you're a sports fan, like, people are like, oh, I don't want to see these AHL guys. I don't want to see guys I don't know. I pay to see this. I pay to see athletic endeavor, right? Like, I want a story that I'm going to remember forever, right? And I'm not saying that kid last night gave me a story I'll remember forever, but he did what was asked of him in the most trying circumstances. And I don't think that you can do anything other than that. And we've had it in the NHL, right? We've had it, you know, you look at the goalie Lindgren in St. Louis. He's won every game since he's come up. He hasn't been in the NHL in 3 years. Like, that's what you want. You want to see these guys be given an opportunity. Another guy in St. Louis, Nathan Walker, same thing, comes up, scores a hat trick. Like, these are stories. Like, you walk into a game and you expect one thing and you get something completely different. So it's a testament to their flexibility and it's a testament to their professionalism.
Absolutely. St. Louis, by the way, playing the Minnesota Wild in the Winter Classic on January 1st, 7 o'clock at Target Field. That's underway, the build out for that. So that's happening. That'll be exciting. And we should mention before we go on any further, there is a best on best international tournament coming up here. It's a junior best on best, the World Juniors. And we have none other than one of my favorites, our colleague Mike Morial joining us in a little while. We talked to him about all about the World Juniors. He gave us the complete overview of everything. So look forward to that interview with Mike, who is also host of the NHL Draft Class, co-host of that podcast with Adam Kimmelman, knows that stuff really well. But Sean, here we are. So we're in a break right now. We know the Olympic break isn't going to be happening. There'll be time off at that point, but we're in a holding pattern here, in the holiday break. So I thought it was a perfect time to let's just take stock of really where we are, right? This is the time to do that. We're past the U.S. Thanksgiving holiday. We're here at Christmas time now. Where are we in the NHL? So there's a couple of teams. We'll do some here prior to, Mike's interview, and a couple on the back end of that too, that I want to talk about with you. Are they for real? Are they legit? The first one, Anaheim. The Anaheim Ducks. I'll give you their numbers. 17-9-6. They're second place in the Pacific Division. They're 9-0-2 against teams below 500 points percentage, 8-9-4 above them. They've been good all year. Are they legit, or are they just overachieving right now?
I think they're legit. They have John Gibson, right? Like, to me, that's a huge part of that equation. And Stolarz has been good for them when they've needed him. Your number two in this league is huge. If you have faith in your number two and he can play above 500, you're going to be in a decent place. And he's played well above 500 when he's played. And again, when we talk about stories, like, that's a great story. Mm-hmm. And then they have the kind of offensive talent that can break open a game. It's young. That's the one thing that kind of scares me, as we get down the stretch and the games become more important. But they're also young and have really young legs. And that, I think, in a really condensed schedule is going to be vitally important, because you're going to play a lot of back-to-backs coming down the stretch, a lot of 3 and 5 night type of things. So a little youthful energy won't hurt.
I think they're legit, too. I think they're for real. I mean, are they a team that you're going to say can absolutely win in the playoffs? Look, if they play in a 2-3 matchup in the Pacific Division, why couldn't they go out and beat a Calgary or beat an Edmonton? Or if Vancouver were to jump up there, or San Jose were to jump up there, why not? Right. I mean, Vegas, I maybe they finish first in that division. Who knows? Right. I mean, I think they're legit. Part of the reason I think they're legit is I look at their special teams. They're top five in the league in both power play and penalty killing. We say it all the time. You hear it all the time. We say it all the time. Special teams wins you games, right? You win and lose sometimes by special teams and goaltending, right? They have goaltending and their special teams are good. So I look at the Anaheim Ducks and I say to myself, this isn't an overachieving team. It's a team doing more than we expected, but maybe we just needed to expect more from them. I don't know. Like, I just like the way that they're, like the mix. They seem to have three lines that can really move. Their D has been, they've got five defensemen who've played in all 32 games that they played. And they're all averaging between like 19.5 and 23.5 minutes. So they're balanced. They're really well balanced. If they get hit with injuries, that throws a wrench into it. But I think you could say that just about every team in the league. If they get hit with injuries, it throws a wrench into it. But I look at them and I'm like, you know what? Anaheim Ducks, they play fast, they play fun, they're for real.
And their D is legit, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, I've always liked Cam Fowler. I think Lindholm's a really good D. Kevin Shattenkirk has seemed to have found himself after a little bit of wandering in the desert, so to speak, and is playing well. So, and good on Dallas Eakins. Like, to me, he's at the midpoint. When we get to the midpoint, he's in that conversation for coach of the year. And I don't know how many votes he gets, because it's not the sexy one. Maybe Bruce Boudreau gets all the votes by that point. We get to the midpoint of the year with the Vancouver Canucks. But look, Dallas had a rough go the first time he went through the league, and he'll be the first one to admit it. He went down to the AHL and he learned from his mistakes. And now it's all coming to fruition, and good on him and good on the Ducks.
Dude took cookies away from the media in Edmonton. Don't do that.
Donuts, Dan.
Donuts, sorry, whatever.
I've been baking all week for Christmas. You can't take away my cookies. I got my peanut butter blossoms right here.
Nice, good. I'd like to try one of those. Let's talk about another team. We'll go east on this one. The Boston Bruins. For so long, a legit Stanley Cup contender, right? Now, the Boston Bruins, they haven't, I mean, they've played only 26 games, which is kind of odd. You know, like you think about it, there's teams like they're behind the Detroit Red Wings now in the standings in the Atlantic Division, but Detroit's played five more games than them. So they're not really behind the Detroit Red Wings. They're 14-10-2. They're 7-5-1 at home. They're 7-5-1 on the road. They're a plus two goal differential team. So they're above 500, but they're playing almost even with their opponents. Are the Boston Bruins still what we think of the Boston Bruins?
I would like to think that they are, but I think things are starting to conspire against them, mm-hmm. right? Like, I wrestled this week with the Super 16, whether they were in or out. They ended up out. They're mm-hmm. 17 on my list, right? Which is weird because they've been in my list for so long. But, you know, you mentioned the lack of games they played, and the schedule was really weird for them early on. They play a game, have 3 days off, play a game, have 4 days off. To the point where it became a storyline in and of itself. Now, if you're a team that's holding a lot of games at hand, usually you'd be excited and you'd be like, whoo, you know, we got all these games in hand. We'll win five games. We're 10 points up in the standings. But they have to play, if my math is right, 56 games coming out of this pause. There's only 100 and if the season ends where it's supposed to end, there's only 124 days left or something like that. That's a lot of hockey on an old team, an old experienced team, right? And, you know, experience is great and all that, but there's a lot of miles on that top line. So that's the part that scares me with the Bruins.
Well, you're also talking, we know the players aren't going to the Olympics now, but that is a window of 56 games that includes zero in a 2.5 week window in February at this point, you know? So yeah, I think it's a lot of hockey. We know their top line is great with Bergeron, Marchand and Pasternak when they're all in the lineup. I don't see the depth both up front and on the back end that we have seen make the Bruins what they are, such a difficult opponent to play against. I don't see it from them right now. They're top heavy, and you don't win when you're top heavy. Their goaltending has been okay. You look at the numbers now, lately it's been a little bit better. Swayman and Linus Ullmark. Tuukka Rask could be on his way back into Boston. He could be looked at as a savior for the team. But I don't think you want to look at Tuukka Rask as a savior. You just want to look at the goaltender and be like, all right, he's going to help us, right? I don't think the Bruins are a legit Stanley Cup contender. I'm starting to question now where their season goes, if it's going to like just kind of dip down to where they're not even going to be really in the playoff mix come, you know, April.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, their GM Sweeney said this week, he spoke, you know, and he's like, we're not where we want to be, but we have a long time to get there. Like, are we even with Tampa Bay? And the answer is no.
No.
And, you know, we have time to get there. We have time to figure it out. And they do have a veteran front office, and they haven't been hesitant to make moves. So maybe they do figure it out. I don't know what kind of flexibility they have. It doesn't seem like a lot to me. They would have to be very creative. But I think the funniest thing you said, and being a good New England boy, I can hear all the Boston fans screaming about you saying that Tuukka Rask is going to be a savior. He's going to be a savior in Boston if he's the savior. They're all going to need Prozac because yeah, everything's Tuukka's fault. And there's no way that guy can save anything. And they're wrong because he's been elite forever. But if that's your answer that you're going to present to Bruins fans is that, oh, Tuukka's coming back, they're literally going to be jumping off the balconies.
Well, here's what keeps them in it. And maybe I should hesitate to say come, you know, that time in April, would they be in it? Because what keeps them in it is, there's such a divide now from the top four teams in the Metro to the five. So you're looking at it and saying at this point, you have to say Carolina, Washington, the Rangers and Pittsburgh are playoff teams, right? And then Tampa, Toronto and Florida are playoff teams. So it really puts Boston in a mix here with Detroit, if they can hang in, Columbus, Philadelphia. But the Bruins have games in hand on all of these teams. So they have to be in a mix there for a wild card spot. So they will likely be in that mix, I just don't know if they have enough to put it over the top, but I think I could say the same thing about all those other teams too. Do they have enough? You know, so let's look at one more of those teams before we get to the interview with Mike Morreale, the Detroit Red Wings. 31 games they've played. They're 15-13-3, 33 points. So they're ahead of the Bruins, as I mentioned, but with more games played, they're better than I thought they would be. They're fun with Lucas Raymond and Moritz Seider and whatnot. They're a minus 16 goal differential, the Red Wings. I mean, is this a team that's got staying power, Sean?
I don't think so. And I love the Detroit story. I just don't see enough there. I don't, you know, look, Larkin's been good. Bertuzzi's been good. The young guys, like you mentioned, have been good. Ned's been good in net. Mm-hmm. But once you get kind of out of that group, like, what do you have? And you know, you talked about Boston being top heavy. And to me, Detroit's top heavy without the experience. And I think that's huge. Again, the only thing you kind of counter it with is the Anaheim argument, right? Like, they are, again, another team with really young legs. And if they want to play them every other day and they need to play 25 minutes, they're just going to smile and do it, because what's better than that, right? Maintenance day. I don't need a maintenance day. Off day, let's go out and skate. You know, there are guys that are hard to keep off the ice. So I don't see the defensive depth there, and I don't see the overall depth, and I don't see a third or fourth line that can contribute when the clamps are being put on you by elite teams.
Yeah, and I do see that from Anaheim, at least on a third line perspective, right? And I see more of a defensive depth there. So yeah, I agree with you on Detroit. By the way, did you see the video of Dylan Larkin? There was a video of Dylan Larkin in warmups. He backed into the glass behind the net and he knocked over some guy's beer, and he felt so bad. He went over to one of the team services guys for the Red Wings, and he asked if the guy had $20 so he could go buy him a new beer.
$20.
$20.
I would want a new beer too at that point.
Very good point. All right. So there's more teams we'll get to on the back end. But first, we talked with Mike Morreale, our colleague with NHL.com. He is all over the World Junior Tournament, and he is the co-host of the NHL Draft Class podcast with Adam Kimmelman. Mike and Adam just had John Morosi from the NHL Network on to talk World Junior. So listen to that podcast. But first, listen to this interview with Mike Morreale. Mike, thanks so much for hopping on with us. It's your time of year, this time in draft time. This is your favorite times of year, right? We got World Juniors coming up, starts on the 26th. Give us the blimp view, the overhand view here. Can Team USA do it again? Is Canada the favorite? What's going on with the World Juniors right now?
Yeah, thanks, Dan. Thanks, Sean, for having me on. And producer Bob Bender, thank you as well. The World Junior Tournament, as you guys know, it seems like it's one of the hardest tournaments to repeat as champions, right? It's the proof is in the history. The last 9 years have seen three different countries win the tournament: Canada, U.S., Finland, three times. None of them have won back to back. In fact, the last back to back champion was Canada during the 5 year run they had 2005 to 2009. This year, I think the U.S. has a good shot, Dan. I really like the defense. And looking at a broad brush here, the U.S. has a real solid defensive core. I think that's going to be their strength. I think offensively, they could be a little challenged here and there. I mean, yes, Matty Beniers is back, the number two overall pick, Seattle Kraken at last draft. He's going to be a leader. Jake Sanderson defensively, by the way, he's going to be captain of this U.S. squad. So offensively, they don't have those Zegerses. They don't have the Cole Caulfields, Arthur Kaliev, the Kings prospect. They're not there. And boy, were they able to light it up last year down the stretch. They also don't have a key ingredient in goal, Dan, and that being Spencer Knight, Florida Panthers, of course. Spencer had a shutout in the final against Canada, 2-0 last year. Spectacular showing there in the tournament, winning his last five straight games, a sub 2.5 goals against. His save percentage was above .950. over those last five games. So they're going to be challenged to find a replacement there. Canada, they're in Group A. Both U.S. and Canada are in different groups this year. So if they do play, it won't be until the medal round, the playoff round. But Canada, you know, they're going to be sparked offensively. They got a real strong offensive group. Defensively, maybe a little challenge there. Goaltending looks to be pretty good. Sebastian Kosa, selected by the Detroit Red Wings last year, a 6'6 goalie. playing really well for the Edmonton Oil Kings in the WHL this year, has really shown what he can provide in big time moments. And I think this is going to be a showcase event for him. Finland, of course, they're always in the mix, Dan, Sean, you know, offensively, they've got a lot of experience coming back. Sweden, I like their goaltending. Jesper Wallstedt, who was chosen in the middle rounds last draft. This is a guy that I think Adam and I, when we were writing stories leading up to the draft, we both said that this is a guy that could be in the NHL a lot sooner than later, just because of his maturity, his poise, and what he's able to bring. And I think this is going to be a great event for him to showcase what he's able to do. And Sergei Zubov takes the reins over at Russia this year, which is interesting. Had a real nice conversation with him in a Q&A that I did. Goaltending is going to be key. Nashville Predators prospect Yaroslav Askarov is back for a third straight tournament. Struggled his first year. Last year came around a little bit. Didn't do enough to help Russia as they finished fourth in the tournament last year. But, you know, I like Askarov's chances to really bounce back here. He needs to show that he is that first round goalie. And, hey, let's face it, a lot of people were comparing him to Carey Price at certain points leading up to his draft. So he needs to prove himself. And of course, Russia has that strong, powerful front. Defensively, they look good. And on top of all that, Dan and Sean, we have a lot of great 2022 draft prospects eligible that are going to be playing in this event. So I'm really looking forward to it, no doubt.
I found a lot of what you said interesting, but one of the things I found most interesting is you said, to me, it seems that the United States might be the better team and Canada has the better talent, but perhaps not in a team setting. But the thing I found most amazing is that you said one of the weaknesses for Canada might be their defense. They're just going to play their top two for 40 minutes a game and it's all set, no?
Yeah, I mean, they probably could. You know, there's no denying Canada left maybe some younger skill off this roster in favor of some older players, Sean, but the forward group is strong, man. You know, Canada is going to contend. You know, Cole Perfetti, Winnipeg Jets prospect, is the lone returnee up front. He's going to be joined by Mason McTavish. We saw what he was able to do in Anaheim. How about, a wealth of riches for Anaheim, right? You see what Zegras is doing, Mason McTavish. He played a handful of games with Anaheim, looked really good before they sent him back. He could have stayed in the NHL this year. He was playing so well, that 200 foot game, strong in the corners. Likely 22 first overall pick, Shane Wright, Sean. This is another kid that's going to have a major impact. He was cut from the team late last year off the club, but this year he's back. He's been looking forward to this all year. I got a chance to speak to him a couple months ago, prior to a season beginning in Kingston in the Ontario Hockey League. And this was a tournament that he was really gearing up for. He wants to showcase his talent. He wants to show what he's all about. He has the size, he's got the poise, great IQ on the ice and what he needs to do to provide offense for his clubs. And I think he's going to have a major impact here for Team Canada. Kent Johnson, Columbus Blue Jackets prospect, University of Michigan forward in his second season. We're going to have four University of Michigan players here, two on U.S., two with Canada. So that's going to be an interesting subplot to all this as well. But Kent Johnson, to me, guys, I'm saying it now before he reaches the NHL, look out. I mean, if you like what Trevor Zegras is doing and the entertainment that he's providing, Kent Johnson, as far as skating goes, the size he brings, the skills, the puck handling, it's been a while since I've seen a player like this. And I know he was ill prior to select camp for Canada. So he did sit out, wasn't at select camp, missed the first three practices for Canada when they were over in Edmonton. But now he's back. He's just starting to get back into the groove, was on the ice with them on Sunday. So he looks good to go and is going to fill a top six role. Dylan Gunther, Arizona Coyotes prospect, Xavier Bourgault of Edmonton, the Oilers prospect. There's a lot of talent here up front and what Canada has to offer. And you're right, Sean, we could go two lines deep, but they do have four lines that coach Dave Cameron is going to put in order here. And I think they're going to be strong. They're going to score a lot of goals. It's just a matter of defending. Are they going to have to outscore people? A little bit of an inexperience, as I said, on the blue line, but for the most part, I really like with the how Canada's roster is shaking out here, no doubt.
One of the players you mentioned on Canada's roster is Shane Wright. And so for fans, what are we looking at? What kind of tournament can he have? Is he going to be, you mentioned all these forwards for Canada, but is Shane Wright going to be an impactful forward on this team, or is he just, you know, a depth forward on this team?
Yeah, well, we've seen that in the past. And a great example, I think I could use, Dan, last year with Matty Beniers, right? We all knew he was going to be a high draft pick. Coming over from the National Team Development Program, the University of Michigan. And he did play Nate Lehman, who is the coach for US again this year. He returns. Nate Lehman had him in a 3C role. So he was playing third line center. Every so often he'd play a wing on the second line. But for the most part, this year, Matty Beniers is going to be at the top. He'll be that first line center for the US. Shane Wright, similar role, I think, coming in. Initially, they may have him play that number three center role. He might play that number two role as well. But this is a player that, you know, real intelligent on the ice. So whoever he's playing with, he's going to play well because, you know, obviously Canada is deep in talent and playmaking what they have here. Shane Wright is a player that, you know, is like a chess player on the ice. You know, he gets out there. He knows what he's able to do to create offense. And he also has, you know, some physicality about him, too, Dan. He'll go into corners. He'll muck it. He'll grind it. So he can play any type of position in any type of slot that Dave Cameron might want him in. I think in a tournament such as this, he's going to want to produce. He's going to want to showcase his skills and what he could bring to the table. I think he's going to be able to do that just because of what we mentioned earlier about the talent on offense of this club. The pressure is not going to be on him. To produce, you know, you think of some of the other countries here, Austria, Germany, they might have 1-2 players that there's going to be so much pressure on them to produce, whether it be a goalie, a number one center, a top D guy. But for Canada, that's not going to be the case. And I think he's going to get big minutes. He's going to play power play. They could also throw him on PK if he need be, because that's what he does for his major junior team in Kingston. So I'm real curious to see how they first, number one, how they're going to use Shane Wright and whatever role he does play. Number two, I'm going to be curious to see how he's going to produce because he's the type of player I think can maybe post, you know, 9, 10, 11 points in this tournament, maybe 5-6 goals, which would be quite an accomplishment for a kid that hasn't even been drafted yet.
Speaking of undrafted kids and how they're going to be used, because this is an overage tournament. This is a 19-year-old tournament, and they're the kids that generally dominate because that jump is huge from 17 to 19. But there's two really young kids in this tournament. Connor Bedard for Canada, who's only the seventh Canadian to play at 16.
Yes.
Joining people like Lindros, Spezza, Gretzky, and the list goes on there. Elite, elite players. Lindros. Oh, I said Lindros already. He was so good, I had to say him twice. And then coming out of nowhere is Mishkov from Russia. Nobody's seen him. Like, you can at least see Connor Bedard. I've seen him play once or twice, whether it's, you know, on the network, on clips, or game of the week, or whatever it might be. Nobody's really seen Mishkov play at all. What do you think happens with these two players? Do you have a sense of how they're going to be used and what kind of a profile they'll be able to develop here?
Yeah. Hey, Sean, by the way, that's great research on your part. Great research.
Happy you said the name right.
Me too. I was so nervous. You notice I didn't say his first name.
Yeah, no, you were struggling. Yeah.
It's Matvey, right?
Matvey. Yep. Matvey Mishkov. Yes. Yes. But yeah, Sean, you know, good point by you. I mean, Connor Bedard, I mean, these are players I think all the media is really, they are really excited to watch them play in this tournament. We don't know the roles they'll have, but we do know they're going to have roles. And I got news for you. I mean, when I spoke to Sergei Zubov and asked him about Mishkov, like he really got it. He was getting excited talking about this kid. And I just recall him saying, you know, 16, 17 years old to see a kid do the stuff that this guy is doing. He's like, I wish I can go back and play with him. He goes, because all I'd have to do is just pass him the puck from the blue line and he'd be doing all the work. So you hear a Hall of Famer like that talk about a young player, it just kind of gets you going. But yeah, Michkov and Bedard, already there's clamor, guys, that this could be the next Sid Ovi in 10 to 15 years down the road after these kids are drafted in 2023. So that's exciting. I mean, it's something you'd want to see. You know, we always love the Sid and and Ovechkin battles. And to maybe have that continue when they call it quits, whenever that might be. Hey, who knows? They may be still playing when these kids are doing their thing in the league. But for Bedard, just a special player. You know, this, as you mentioned, Sean, he's the youngest player on this year's team, and he joins McDavid, Crosby, Bouwmeester, Spezza, Lindros, Gretzky as the seventh player at that age to represent Canada at the World Juniors. Bedard is the smallest player on the team at 5'9", 180 pounds. So, you know, you do know that maybe teams are going to try to take advantage of that. You got the big defenseman trying to work him over and stuff. But I tell you, he knows how to play with the puck. He's good in tight corners. You hear it all the time when coaches talk about smaller players that are so deftly skilled. They can stick handle in a phone booth. That's the type of player Connor Bedard is. And he should, I believe, guys, that he's going to be able to play his way into a top six role here. He's dynamic. He's got game-changing abilities. He should be a key player as Canada attempts to redeem themselves from last year's loss to the U.S. And Michkov, these players are going to go 1-2 in that 23 draft. I can almost guarantee. I know we're a ways away, but you could just kind of sense it. Michkov, 12 goals, 16 points in 7 games for Russia at the World U18 Championships this past spring as a double underage player. He became the youngest player in Russian history to play on the senior men's national team a month ago. He celebrated that achievement by scoring a Michigan goal in his debut. And when I talked to Connor Bedard about Michkov, I specifically asked him, I says, I know it's 2 years away, but do you see that battle already starting to, come to bat here when you're playing in a tournament that Michkov happens to be in? And he says, well, he goes, I don't follow players because I got, I'm involved in what I'm doing. But he goes, it's hard to ignore the fact that Michkov is scoring a lacrosse goal every second game or every third game. I do see it. So he's an exciting player to watch. If you do get an opportunity to watch Russia, for the fans out there, you watch this team, you see what they have. Obviously they got some, senior players, those 19-year-olds, 18-year-olds, but you got to watch Michkov too, because electrifying, game breaking skill makes him a player to watch. And one other player I like to mention, guys, Dalibor Dvorsky from Slovakia. He's another 16-year-old that'll be playing at this tournament. Slovakia could be a surprise team at this tournament. They are in Group B along with the U.S., Sweden, Russia, and Switzerland. So Dvorsky, a 16-year-old, exceptional talent, had 12 points, 8 goals, 4 assists at the Hlinka Gretzky in August, and he could surprise a lot of people at this World Juniors event, no doubt.
Is there a European team that can really challenge the U.S. or Canada in this to win gold? I mean, it seems like the U.S. and Canada are the favorites, and it seems like they're the favorites every year to play in the gold medal game. But, or at least, one of them get to the gold medal game if they play earlier in the medal round, whatever it is. But is there another team out there that's like a legit gold medal threat?
Yeah, you know what, Dan, it's tough for me to choose one. I will tell you that I have Sweden, Finland, and Russia in there. And I know that's the case internationally for a lot of tournaments that we do cover, but it's hard to ignore them. Finland, I really like the experience they bring here. Obviously they lose Anton Lundell, who's having a great year with the Florida Panthers. But they have a team here, Ronnie Hirvonen, the Maple Leafs prospects, a guy that I think could play a big role here for Finland. They got depth up front. 2022 draft eligible Yoakam Kemell, a player that I really like. He could go top five in this upcoming draft, playing really well, you know, in Liga, Finland's top professional men's league. He should play a top six role in this tournament. I like the depth that Finland has here. You know, as far as Russia goes, we talked about the goaltending, Askarov. And the one thing about this tournament, Dan, that, you know, is the difference maker I see every year, it is goaltending. If you have a goalie that's going to be able to star and really make saves when you need them at critical moments, since it is a short tournament, you don't get to really prep for teams. You don't know kind of what they're all about until maybe later. So those early preliminary games, you're not really sure what you're getting. So the goaltending is key, since they're almost on their own island and playing in these international events. And then, you know, of course, you know, when you look at Sweden, this is a team that is really motivated. They were hit hard with COVID last year. Their coach was out of the tournament. They lost some key players in the tournament. But, you know, they have a nice group of players here. You know, Simon Edvinson is back. He could be a nice X factor, the defenseman, another draft pick for the Detroit Red Wings. Excellent size, great stick. It's going to be nice to see him play in this tournament. You know, Fabian Lassell, the Boston Bruins prospect, might be on a line with Alexander Holtz. Obviously, they don't have Lucas Raymond, who's now starring and could be in the call to trophy race for the Red Wings. You know, I like with this team and William Eklund. I can't forget Eklund, a player who started the season with the San Jose Sharks, played well, sent him back. And now, you know, Eklund, Holtz, Fabian Lassell, I think that could be a top line for Sweden. I like what they have. And then finally for Sweden, of course, is the strength, I think, is their goaltending. You know, Hugo Ahlenfelt, Tampa Bay Lightning prospects, is back for at another tournament. And Jesper Wallstedt, the Minnesota Wild prospect who was drafted. I think both those goalies will prove to be exceptional. In fact, we're running our predictions, Dan, you know, I guess later this week on NHL.com. So I don't want to give too much away, but I will say that I really feel high on Wallstedt and what he may be able to prove in this tournament. And I think he may turn out to be the goaltender of the tournament.
Shockingly, Mike, I was not asked for my opinion in the predictions. I guess I don't rate, and I don't rate because you and Adam Kimmelman and the guys from the French site certainly know the prospects better than I do, and pay much more attention to this tournament. So I'm just teasing about that. But if I did have to pick, I think I'd put the Finns as that dark horse to be in the championship game, just because of the style that they play. They play as a team, which you don't see a lot of at the World Juniors, and they really ask other teams a lot of questions that those teams don't want to answer physically, in what is generally not a physical tournament for the most part. So I, as usual, I would go with the pesky Finns to be a part of that. You know, we've talked about a lot of prospects and mentioned a lot of teams. The one team that intrigues me is the Devils, right? They have three prospects playing in this tournament, two of whom are huge names in Holes and Hughes. And then the Russian player that they have too, Mohamed Dulin, I believe. His name is.
Yes.
And so that's another wave that's on the way that can be added to this young mix of promising players that the Devils have. But where are they now, right? Like, we look at this, and I know Dan had a question in his mailbag, like, how long does it take to rebuild when you have two elite young defense centers and you go out and you sign one of the biggest free agent defensive prospects in Dougie Hamilton. And then some other people on the farm, a young goalie that's come up and has played okay, and Schmid. Where are the Devils now? There's certainly people around the team are disappointed. The fans are disappointed. I don't know if expectations were too high from the start of the year, but in your opinion, where are they right now?
Yeah, it's been a serious slide here, right, Sean? I they started the season like gangbusters, came out really well, really strong. And Tom Fitzgerald pointed to that on Monday during his press conference, how, you know, they were so happy with the start of the Devils, you know, a lot of expectations after bringing in Dougie Hamilton, Jonathan Bernier in goal as a backup to Mackenzie Blackwood. Tomas Tatar to help fill out maybe that top six. But, you know, the past, you know, 10, 11 games, that hasn't been the case. And I suppose you can point to, you know, injury and illness. I mean, let's face it. I mean, the Devils, you know, healthy team, full throttle, full unit, you know, working on all cylinders. It's a team that scored 7 goals against the Florida Panthers, came back to defeat the Tampa Bay Lightning. And now they find themselves on a 5-game losing streak. I mean, you know, injuries have been that challenge. They lost Bernier. You know, I think, Sean, you know, Miles Wood was a big loss, because let's face it, the Devils don't really have that veteran guy. I know they have players that have experience in the locker room, but they don't have a guy that when you're in there and times are tough and, you know, maybe the team is looking for someone to create a message other than the coach. I'm not sure they have that guy. I mean, let's face it, Damon Severson, the defenseman, is their lone, you know, guy that probably has the most experience. He's the longest tenured Devil right now. So Miles Wood is not there with his injury. Jack Hughes missed 17 games with a shoulder injury. And now Blackwood is dealing with a neck injury. And of course, you had 5 players in COVID protocol. So it's been difficult for them these last 10, 11 games. And I think, you know, that's why Fitzgerald was hoping, and the league did oblige to, you know, cancel that game on Tuesday against Pittsburgh, and the Devils won't play again until the 27th at the St. Louis Blues. But just getting back to the overall question, the players in the lineup, you would expect to still have that push, to still want to do things to kind of exceed expectations, knowing that there are so many guys out of the lineup. And I think that's what has disappointed Lindy Ruff, you know, during this losing stretch and what he's experienced. He talks about it time and time again about the little things. He talks about the little things that, you know, create big opportunities for the opposition. And the Devils, they just they don't have that voice that you would hope in the locker room, that veteran presence. And second, you know, this is a team that needs to be working on all cylinders all the time with so many guys out of the lineup. So it's been a frustrating season, no doubt, for fans and the players alike when you speak to them post game and get their comments. So it's been a difficult year, Sean, but you know, you have high hopes that if they're able to get it together after this break, after the holiday break, that and they're healthy, maybe they can turn it around somehow.
They are, Mike. They are one of the teams that I'm going to be watching coming out of the break, if they can get their health together, if they can get guys back on the ice, because the talent is there. Like they have the talent. They're not ready to win in a playoff talent yet, but they have talent to be better than they've been. Anyway, World Juniors for you. You've given us all the information we need. Thanks so much for hopping on with us. All right.
Thanks, Dan. Thanks, Sean. Have a great day, guys.
That was Mike Morial, and he's a beauty. He loves the World Juniors, as he should, because it's a great tournament. He's going to be covering it from front to back. The tournament's in Red Deer and Edmonton, Alberta. So it's going to be prime time here in the States. You'll be able to see the games, unlike in Europe, when a lot of it's played early in the day and you miss it. So great holiday viewing. Starts on Boxing Day for our Canadian friends and goes through the first week of January. And like I said, must-see TV. The NHL Network is going to have all the games on, which they've done for the last couple of years, and it's been fantastic. It's like a holiday present that just keeps on giving, Dan. Every day I sit in front of the TV and watch games. So especially with the pause here that we have for a few days, it'll be the only hockey on TV, which will be great. TSN, as our Canadian friends know, because it's like religion to them. But definitely listen to the Draft Class podcast. They do a great job. They go way more in depth than we did. We kind of did the overview on the Draft Class with John Morosi. They did the master's thesis on the World Juniors. So listen to that if you're into it. And then let's get back to teams in the NHL that we're wondering about, whether we're going to keep that present when we open it under the tree, or whether we're going and to the return line and giving it back to kind of have the holiday theme here with it. And the first one is going to be the lightning rod for me, the one that actually gets people that listen to this podcast fired up enough to hunt me down on Twitter. It's the New York Rangers. I still don't believe in the New York Rangers. I think their last 2 weeks showed that. right? And it's been the argument I've had all along. And look, I know that their number one goalie was out for a bit of it, but every time they play a good team, they don't win. How are you a playoff team if you win one out of every four games you play against elite competition?
Well, I'll tell you how. And I think that the Rangers are a playoff team. They're a legit playoff team. What that means once they get there, I don't know. I'm not going to say that I think that they are a legit Stanley Cup team. I guess if you get to the playoffs, it's always the rule of thumb is if you get in, you got a chance, right? Here's what the Rangers are. The Rangers are a team right now that are good enough, really good enough, to beat all the teams that they should beat on the schedule. And that's what they're doing. I gave the stat earlier about Anaheim with this, you know, their record against teams that are below a 500 points percentage and their record against teams that are above a 500 points percentage. It's similar with the Rangers. They're 12-0-1 against teams who have a below 500 points percentage. So the Rangers right now are beating the teams that they are quote unquote supposed to beat. They're 7-7-3 against teams with a 500 points percentage or better. So they're a 500 team against the better teams. They're one of the better teams. They have a 500 points percentage against those teams. That gets you in the playoffs, Sean. When you're beating the teams you're supposed to beat and you're winning half the games against the teams that you're technically not supposed to beat, whatever you want to say, that gets you in the playoffs. You're good enough to get in the playoffs. Does that mean you're good enough to win in the playoffs? Probably not, unless your goaltender gets on a heater. Their goaltender can get on a heater. He's that good. And the last 2 weeks, they've missed him. I think Alexander Georgiev has played well in that time that they've missed him. I have no issues with it, with how he's played. The issues that I have with the Rangers are, they're twofold. One, the top line, if you want to call it that, with Mika Zibanejad and Chris Kreider is missing. And, you know, it's good, and Kaapo Kakko, but they're not generating enough 5-on-5. Power play is dynamic. They're getting a lot of points on their power play. Not enough 5-on-5. And their third line, which is the kid line for them with Philip Hedel, Julien Gauthier, and Alexis Lafreniere, has the puck a lot, doesn't do a lot with it. And so they need more depth scoring, and they probably need another top six forward, because right now Dryden Hunt is playing in their top six, and he's fine. But if you want to be a legit playoff threat, you got to have something better than that. No offense to Dryden Hunt. He was a fourth line guy to make the team. He was actually a scratch to make the team and fourth line guy to made it. And now he's on that Panarin line. So I think they're legit to make the playoffs. And I think they've put themselves in that position. Where it goes from there, I think, is really up to Igor Shesterkin.
Yeah, and that may be true. And so they make the playoffs. I don't think that's what Ranger fans are talking about. I don't know that that's what we're talking about. I don't see them cracking that top half of the playoff bracket. They're just not dynamic enough. And they literally cannot beat a good team.
They're in a lot of these games with some good teams. I got to give them a little bit more credit.
They're in a lot of games. So are the New Jersey Devils.
But let's see when they get their goalie back. You know, I think he makes a huge difference for them. All right. So I think we're disagreeing on the Rangers. I'm not 100% sure. but what about Pittsburgh? Let's talk about another team in the Metro, right? They are soaring right now. 7 wins in a row. They've really separated themselves from the bottom 4 teams in the Metro. The Penguins have really, you know, given that separation. I think it's 10 points now between them and the 5th place Columbus Blue Jackets. As we speak here on the break, they're going to get Malkin back at some point. They're going to get Gensel back at some point. They're going to get Rust back at some point. Crosby's playing. Are they legit?
For sure they're legit. They have a great coach, another guy who should and won't be, but who should be in the coach of the year conversation. The guys on elite teams never get any kind of recognition for that because I could coach the Penguins. Well, you couldn't coach the Penguins without the guys that they've had, right? Evan Rodriguez is playing a huge role on that team right now, and nobody thought that was going to happen. So the difference here between them and some of the teams that we're not buying is the depth is there. You know, they can slide guys that are playing top six now into their bottom six when Malkin, Rust, and Gensel come back. And you're making some really dynamic lines then. They have a good D. Jarry's been good, and there's been question marks about their goaltending for sure, and he's answered a lot of those. So to me, they're definitely a top four team in the East.
Shame on me, because I do this. I did this again. I did it last year too, I think. I started to doubt a Mike Sullivan team. I started to doubt a Sidney Crosby team. I don't know why I do that, because maybe I'm looking at it and saying this run has been going on for so long, eventually it has to end. Oh, injuries, you know, at the start of the season, Crosby was out, Malkin was out. You know, I mean, so many questions about their goaltending. How are they going to be able to handle all this? Shame on me, because here they are again, right? Now, yeah, they needed to get on a hot streak to get back into this, but that's what good teams do. They find their way back with a hot streak, right? And then they stay consistent. And I see no reason to believe, from what I've seen from the Penguins, for them not to stay consistent at this point and be a top four team in that division, be a top three team potentially in that division, easily make the playoffs, easily make the playoffs. Like, this isn't, to me, it's not even a question right now for them to make the playoffs. They're going to get in easy. And I did it again. Like, I started to doubt Mike Sullivan and Sidney Crosby. And it's like, why do I do that? Because they continue to prove they're so good at what they do.
And you worry about injuries, but they've already proven that they can weather injuries. Mm-hmm. And injuries to stars, not depth injuries, like injuries to their key core personnel. And they just are like, it's okay. Here's this guy, and we're going to plug him in, and we're just going to keep going. So I have no questions about the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Yeah. All right, last one we'll talk about here. The Nashville Predators. We'll go out west and we'll do Nashville. So they're like the Penguins. They've won seven in a row. They're second in the Central Division. Here's why I think Nashville, and we talked about them last week with the Philip Forsberg question for the mailbag, and we're like, you know, almost like laughing at why they would not want to keep Philip Forsberg, right? Are they a contender? They're a legit contender to me, you know, right now, the way I see them playing, and two reasons. Number one, they're hard to play against. Like, they've finally, I think, developed the John Hines system, and they push, they attack. They're hard to play against. They battle in the corners. They have arguably the best defenseman in the league, if not in the Western Conference, in Roman Josi, who just makes up for so many things that we don't necessarily see on the ice that Roman Josi does. He does them so well. And the other part about this, they have elite goaltending in Juuse Saros, who I believe is sort of like Igor Shesterkin, has become one of the top five, if not top six, one of those goalies in the league. I look at Nashville and I say, this is a 7-game winning streak. It's not going to last, but it's no fluke. They're a playoff team.
For sure. And the difference between this Nashville team, I think, and some of the other Nashville teams that in the past, where you're kind of like, oh, maybe, maybe not, is they can score, right? Mm-hmm. Like, not only do they have an elite goaltender, and they have a elite top two in Josi and Ekholm, but they have guys who can put the puck in the net, right? They have five guys with over 20 points, Forsberg being the fifth of those with 22, you know, point per game players, basically, right? All of them. And then other guys playing below that who are chipping in a little bit here and there. Tolvanen has five goals. You know, like, they're a team. And you're right, they're difficult to play against, and they come at you in waves, and they don't give you much. Like, to me, they're a little like Calgary, but not as in your face. Like, it's almost sneaky. Like, you go into the game and you're like, oh, you go into a game against Calgary and you're like, we're going to get our teeth knocked in. And if we're going to win, we're really going to pay a price. I don't know that people think that when they play Nashville, and then all of a sudden they get on the bus to go back to the airport and they've run out of ice.
Mm-hmm. They are that type of team right now. And I think back to, you know, one of the coaches' room stories that Dave Barr did for us, you know, breaking down power plays, because Nashville for the last few years was one of the worst power plays in the league. And now they're 25% power play, right? I mean, they're clicking at 25.6%. They're seventh in the league right now. And Dave Barr wrote about this. He said when Ryan Ellis was there, he was shooting from the side, you know, the point, but like, you know, the left point, his strong side. And a lot of shots were going, if they were getting through, the goalie was angling them away towards the boards, right? Or there were not rebounds coming in front. Roman Josi is shooting more on the power play from the top, and the rebounds are coming back in. They're creating more chances that way. As Dave Barr wrote about this, I was watching it. It's true. And their power play as a result, you know, along with many other reasons, you know, is a legit threat now. That was the thing to me. One of the big things that was holding Nashville back for so long is their power play was so bad. They'd get on the power play and it was almost like, you know, an easy 2 minutes for the team that was killing the penalty. And now they get on the power play and they're a dangerous team. They can score. And I look at the Predators and I say, I wouldn't want to go anywhere near this team in a playoff series for a lot of those reasons. And then especially UC Saros, who is really, I mean, Sean, he is, we talk, you look at it, Henrik Lundqvist to Igor Shesterkin in New York, Pekka Rinne to UC Saros in Nashville. It's an easy transition.
Yeah, no, and it's been great and good on him because there were so many expectations, right?
Yeah.
He's following his Finnish idol. The Nashville fans love their goalie more than anything, right? And now here he comes, and he's just given them everything they've asked for and more. He's Pekka Rinne light.
And one of the teams they could play in the playoffs if they get there is the Minnesota Wild or the St. Louis Blues. And what a transition that is to closing the podcast with a little pop for the Winter Classic, isn't it, Sean? That was a nice transition. You like that? Like,
dude, you are turning into a pro right before our eyes. It's amazing to watch your development.
Before your ears. How about that?
Well, I get to watch too.
Yeah, you do.
I have the secret feed where I see everything that happens, and the transformation is stunning.
That's all you're going to say? I mean,
stunning. How can I do better than stunning?
I'm going to keep listening if you want to keep talking about me.
No, I'm done with stunning.
All right. That's fine. Anyway, we will. It's 8 days until we're going to Minneapolis, Target Field, for the Winter Classic, the Blues and the Wild. You see some renderings of what it's supposed to look like. It looks awesome. You see the build out right now, Sean. It's happening at Target Field. A couple of former Wild players, Ryan Carter and Thomas Vanek, who have outdoor game experience. Thomas Vanek played in the first Winter Classic in 2008 in Buffalo. They were there the other day. They talked about what it was like. So, I mean, to me, it's always my favorite event of the year, the Winter Classic. And this one I expect to be just as good, sort of like that. You know, it's going to be a great hockey game between two very good teams that are battling it out in Central Division. But I think it'll be a celebration of hockey in the state of hockey.
Yeah, and that's the best part of all these games, right? Like, the game's going to be great, and it is going to be a slugfest, mm-hmm. right? There are two teams that will really go at you, and physically, St. Louis seems to be finding their way back into an elite team. Minnesota's played well all year. It's a chance for them on the national stage to kind of say, you don't know who we are. Here's our calling card. Like, they can make a statement in this game. Kaprizov's going to be on national TV, and what a year he's having after a very rough start, right? Late to camp or right at the start of camp. You know, it took him a while to find his legs. Now he's found him and nobody's stopping him. He's what, fourth in the league now in scoring, which is unbelievable, but it is going to be a celebration of the state of hockey. And, you know, I've done stories in the past as they've played in outdoor games or they hosted the last one they did, like, every dude that grew up in Minnesota has outdoor hockey stories. Like, sometimes you do these games and you really have to fight to find an outdoor hockey story. But like, I remember talking to Paul Martin and him just talking about all the games he played outdoors, like his youth games, high school games, you know, and then just walking. Right, walking around the block to an outdoor rink that the city keeps beautifully done that you could just go and play pickup on. There's almost no place in the country that has that other than Minnesota. Like, I grew up in a cold weather climate. We never had that. We went and skated on the cow pond and we had to mm-hmm. wait till it froze and we had to avoid the weeds and everything else. These guys, it's in their blood. And you know, sometimes the cold is a detriment for the fans and everything else. None of that's going to happen. It is going to be, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah. No, they're ready for the cold there in Minnesota. They're used to it. And you're right. It's sort of like the frozen lakes and everything is like, you know, straight out of a movie. So that'll be exciting. I can't wait to get there. We thank Mike Morial for hopping on with us. Again, NHL Draft Class Podcast is a co-host with Adam Kimmelman. They had John Morosi on from NHL Network to preview the World Juniors. So listen to that after you have listened to us. And we're in a break now, but when we come out of it, enjoy the hockey, enjoy the holidays, and as always, stay safe.